www.trusts.org.
This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Joe and Terry Graydon have become as important to public radio as Dr. Oz has to TV, perhaps more so because they've been around for so long. More than 30 years now, their show, The People's Pharmacy, has been collecting and sharing health information with listeners. And many of the remedies they share come from traditional scientific channels, but they also spend a considerable amount of time on folk or traditional remedies, which they find out about through various sources, including from you. The Graydons are in town to speak at several different events for the public library this week. In fact, they're speaking today at 2 at the South County Regional Library and tonight at 6 at the Main Library, which is a half a block away from where we sit today. It's free, but you have to register for that, and you can get information about that on our website at WFAE.org. But they have graciously accepted our invitation to get the jump on the library, so to speak, and join us for the hour here. Welcome back to the program.
Thank you so much, Mike.
Nice to be with you.
Yeah, last time we were here, we had a big audience, and you know,
it was a big deal.
And for those who didn't hear that program, I want to go back to the beginnings before we talk about all the things we have on our plate to talk about. You are, Joe, a pharmacologist.
Absolutely right.
And you are an anthropologist.
Correct.
Terry, and I'm just curious how you join forces for a show that is about, fundamentally, about medicine, about health.
Well, it gets to what is a medical anthropologist and why that is so fundamental to our good health.
Well, anthropologists, as you know, study human behavior. Mm-hmm. Medical anthropologists, which is my particular specialty, like to study human behavior that relates to health. Now, that leaves a lot of territory, and Joe and I do cover a lot of territory, but that's what I'm interested in, is what are people thinking about, what do they believe, what are they doing, and how does all of that affect their health?
But as a pharmacologist, you must look at this as hoo-ha, some of it, not all of it.
For a very long time, I did. I mean, I worship at the fountain of randomized, double-blind, placebo-controlled trials.
Uh-huh.
And Terry was saying, but you have to pay attention to what people are doing and what they believe and what their experiences are. And I was going, I'm not having any of that. I mean, nobody does randomized, double-blind, placebo-controlled trials on folk wisdom or home remedies. What nonsense. But then I started to actually listen, pay attention, and even sometimes try some of these remedies. And it was like, wow, they work. Holy cow. And so we sort of began to come together and collaborate. And our mantra has evolved to, if it might help and it won't hurt, and it doesn't cost very much, well, why not give it a try? And over the last two decades, there have been some incredible pharmaceutical flameouts. And so I've become a little more thoughtful and cautious about the prescription drugs and even some of the over-the-counter ones. So I think this idea of medical anthropology and folk wisdom is actually gaining a lot of traction with our listeners.
And why wouldn't it work? When you come right down to it, we may not understand exactly why, because as you say, it hasn't been studied like pharmaceutical drugs have been studied. But drugs are just chemicals, and they react in the body chemically, and so are all these things that you've put on the tabletop here that are home remedy items. They're chemicals.
Exactly right. And I think one of the points at which we really realized that was when we started learning about grapefruit-drug interactions. Because grapefruit, if you eat grapefruit or drink grapefruit juice, it can have a profound effect on how your drugs behave.
As a matter of fact, if you take a statin drug, they tell you specifically on the label, do not ingest grapefruit.
Right. For many of the statins.
Why?
Because it will raise the blood level of your statin drug and you will get much more than your doctor actually prescribed. And that means you're more susceptible to side effects. But what I realized was that, of course, the body isn't going to distinguish between grapefruit and a drug. It takes them all in and it says, well, this is what I've got to work with. And our enzymes and our proteins and all of the machinery inside of us that operates without us even being aware of it, it all evolved to manage plants mostly and the extremely interesting compounds that plants put out.
Well, let me turn to the pharmacology. I'm going to get back to this grapefruit thing. Because,
sure.
Because there are problems with people who have certain drugs in their system and having to drink grapefruit juice or eat a grapefruit. What is it about grapefruit? Why aren't oranges and lemons and limes, they're all citrus, why aren't they causing the same problem?
Well, I'll never forget when Terry came running downstairs holding the journal article. It was in The Lancet. Terry, what was that, 1991, saying, Joe, you're never going to believe this. Grapefruit affects medicine. And I'm going, why are you so excited? Well, look at this. 3 times higher blood levels of a drug called phenlotypine, Plendil, a blood pressure medicine. And when we wrote about it, pharmacists would laugh people out of the store. You know, patients would come in, the Gradens said. They go, oh, the Gradens, there they go. The People's Pharmacy, they're off on another tangent. But over the last 15 years, it's gotten incredible traction. So there's an ingredient in grapefruit that probably part of that bitter flavor that I happen to love. Furanocoumarins is one of the name for it. It interacts with an enzyme in your digestive tract called CYP, C-Y-P, cytochrome P450, 3A2.
3A4.
And that particular enzyme is responsible for a rapid metabolism of a lot of drugs, including Lipitor, a statin drug, Zocor, simvastatin, another statin drug, and Mebicor, the very first statin, lovastatin. So all of these statins are profoundly affected by this, what we call first-pass metabolism in your stomach. The grapefruit ingredient, I won't say it completely wipes out the enzyme, but it really knocks it for a loop. What that means is blood levels of those statins go up. So if you're taking atorvastatin, Lipitor, you may be getting twice or 3 times more than your doctor actually prescribed, which means increased risk of side effects.
Yeah. I don't want to get stuck on statins here, but you talk a lot about statins on your show because you get a lot of calls about people taking statin drugs, and they have these horrible side effects from statin drugs, some of them. They complain about muscle failure and muscle aches and all kinds of things. Could it be that they don't know not to drink grapefruit juice? Could it be that there are other foods that we eat that increase side effects, not only of statin drugs, but other drugs? We just don't know.
It absolutely could be. And we're always on the lookout for those. Now, we do know that there are a few other fruits, for example, that will have a similar effect to grapefruit. And what is it called? Bitter orange? The Seville oranges that they make marmalade out of also have that furanocoumarin in it.
Well, take a very powerful drug called Coumadin, warfarin. It's a blood thinner. It saves lives. It also can be quite dangerous. If you eat a lot of green leafy vegetables, which we're told are very good for us and which really are, like spinach and broccoli and Brussels sprouts and all of those other greens, you can really have a profound effect on that blood thinner, because they have what we call vitamin K in them, which antagonizes, or it prevents the warfarin, the Coumadin, from doing what it's supposed to do. So you could have a blood clot, which is what the drug is trying to prevent, which could mean a heart attack, a stroke, or goodness knows what. So there are dozens of food-drug interaction issues that we are very worried about, and we fear that in this modern day of everybody rush, the doctor may not be able to communicate that information in the short time available, and the pharmacist, goodness knows, these days, they're really under the gun too. So patients are kind of on their own to find out about these kinds of interactions.
You've been doing this show, this radio show, for 32 years, if I did the math right. And it all started with a book that you wrote, Joe, called The People's Pharmacy in 1976.
Correct.
Somewhere in there. So you've been doing this for a long time. And you write a newspaper column that appears in the Charlotte Observer and hundreds of other papers around the country every week. You hear from a lot of people, listeners, readers, etc. What do you hear most about? What do they want to know most about, and what are they telling you most about?
Well, I think there are two things. One, they want to know about the latest drug developments, either breakthroughs, and there are very few of them, but every once in a while something comes along that changes lives. We just wrote about one, an antidepressant, actually a drug that was developed 30 years ago as an anesthetic, that appears to produce a powerful antidepressant effect within hours. It's really astonishing.
I just read about this in the paper yesterday, or day before yesterday.
Correct. And this is a hard-to-treat depression. Mm-hmm. This drug could revolutionize mental health. So ketamine, that's the drug, is getting a lot of traction, and there are some new developments in that field. So people want to know about that, especially if they know someone who's suffering. They also want to know about drug disasters, you know, the Vioxx problem, the Avandia issue. There are quite a few medications, as I said a little earlier ago, that flamed out and are flaming out as we speak. And people want to know. So we issue what we call people's pharmacy alerts when that happens. But then finally, people want to know, and what they really love are these home remedies that we have stretched out right here in front of us on the table. You know, it's summertime. You're going to be out grilling. You're going to burn yourself. What do you do?
Oh, soy sauce.
Well, or, and we'll talk about a threefer in a second, and that's yellow mustard. You're at the ballpark, and now all of a sudden you've had just too much to eat. You know, the pizza, the dogs, the sauerkraut, the soda, the beer, and now heartburn is biting back. So they want to know, well, what do I do right now at the ballpark? How can I ease my heartburn? So people really want to know about home remedies for the summer, bug bites, bee stings. And it's both, you know, the good news and the bad news of health, and that happens every day.
Lucky for us, people also love sharing their home remedies, what they've discovered.
Right. Joe just said that people want to know. And I remember doing programs, because I've been doing this a long time too, where people didn't want to know, where people looked at the doctor as being God. They didn't think it was – they weren't going to second guess the doctor. They didn't go running to the library to look up whatever condition they thought they had or the symptoms they thought they had. But today, they run right to the internet. They listen to you. I actually quoted you to my doctor, and he was like, oh, please.
Here they go again.
Yeah, doctors don't like that very much.
but people do want to. Do you find that since you've been doing this since the 80s that people know more? Because that was one of your goals, to get people more aware of health and taking care of themselves.
Yes. I think there has been a very significant shift, not for everybody, but for a great part of the population. And people do want to be more involved. And they don't like it when their doctor says, just do what I tell you and don't ask questions. And they really hate it when the doctor gets annoyed or angry if they ask a question about something they found online.
Well, just from personal experience, and not getting too deeply into the weeds here, he wasn't annoyed with me when I quoted you. I had some questions about something he wanted to put me on for a while, and I said, well, I heard the Gradens talk about such and such, and I'm a little worried about this because here's what I'm hearing not only from them but from their listeners. And he was like, well, you got to do this, and so we'll put you on a low dosage. You got to do it. But I don't want it. You got to do it. So he didn't fight me on it, but he was firm.
Well, what I find fascinating is when the internet started, so to speak, early on, people said, well, you know, this new thing called email. You know, this is only for young guys, geeky guys who are computer nerds. Women, girls, they'll never get into email. And it was like, how long did that last? That was like, you know, a nanosecond, and all of a sudden, you know, women were involved. Then it was like, oh, older people, they'll never master computers and email and the web surfing stuff. And then, you know, like another nanosecond later, and everybody was on board. And it's the same thing with health information. And people was like, oh, no, this is too sophisticated for you to understand. Mm-hmm. And now, of course, we know that everybody is seeking health information on the web.
Joe and Terry Graydon are our guests. They're hosts of The People's Pharmacy, which you hear here on Saturday mornings at 7. We've asked listeners to share their home remedies. We'll get to some of those as well. And they brought a plethora of their own home remedies, and it's on the desk. We'll come back and talk about that in a moment. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and the professional MBA program at USC's Darla Moore School of Business, coming to Uptown Charlotte in August. Details at 800-950-PMBA. And Mr. Rogers Windows, a local family business since 1986, offering renewal by Anderson replacement windows and entry door systems installed by trained craftsmen. Product details at MrRogersWindows.com. 6 months after the Newtown shootings, families of victims meet with members of Congress exploring efforts to reignite the gun control debate, the topic of the conversation, in 40 minutes at 10 o'clock on the Diane Rehm Show. We're coming right back with Joe and Terry Graydon. Stay with us. ¶¶
Public Radio Remix is a different kind of public radio.
Radio tells you what's coming up. Audio draws you in and puts you in the right frame of mind. It prepares you for what's coming. Radio gives you headlines. Audio tells a story. It creates a world, and it pulls you right in.
Stories, podcasts, found tape, and intriguing sounds. Experience the best audio on the radio on Public Radio Remix. Saturdays, 9 to midnight on listener-supported 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Joe and Terry Graydon are back with us. They're hosts of The People's Pharmacy. They're also authors of The Best Choices from The People's Pharmacy, Top Screw-Ups Doctors Make and How to Avoid Them, a book we talked about last time they were here, and Home Remedies. They write a newspaper column that appears in The Observer and hundreds of other newspapers around the country as well. They've been doing this forever, since 1981. We asked our listeners to share their home remedies. Here are some of them. Wren on Facebook says, my family drinks a tea made of garlic, ginger, lemons, and honey for illnesses. All that sounds good except for the garlic. I also use garlic olive oil ear drops for ear infections. Garlic is the secret ingredient. It keeps vampires away. So what else does it do?
Oh, good gracious. You know, what people have told us is if you soak your Tootsies in a kind of a garlicky, olive oily type solution, or if you get a cotton ball and you soak it in the olive oil, garlic, and then put it between your toes, athlete's foot is gone. So that's another one. Now, your toes may smell a little funny, but yes, garlic is good for that.
It turns out that garlic has a lot of antifungal and antimicrobial activity, so it's not a surprise that it shows up in a lot of these remedies.
There's something else that you recommend that gets rid of toenail fungus.
Well, we brought along our Listerine.
Yes,
and Listerine does too have antifungal ingredients. Terry, you know the herbal stuff in Listerine better
than I do. Thymol, eucalyptol,
menthol,
eugenol, I think, which comes from cloves,
alcohol, of
menthol.
Course. And so if you soak your feet in amber, don't try the blue or the green. You will have funny looking feet for a long time. But the amber Listerine, perhaps with a little white vinegar, and you do this religiously for several months, 15, 20 minutes while you're watching the evening news or listening to the radio, your fungus will go away, whether it's athlete's foot or whether it's nail fungus. So that's one remedy that we like to recommend. We also have heard from people who say, you can use Listerine on your bug bites. You can use it on your doggy hot spots if you add a little baby oil to it. You know, when a dog has a hot spot, they tend to lick at that spot continuously.
Mm. And people also use Listerine for dandruff, so they rinse their hair with it.
Oh, speaking of hair, you know, this is the time when you send kids off to summer camp. They often come home with lice. Not nice. Well, if you massage in Listerine, again, amber, the old-fashioned Listerine.
Unless, of course, your kid wants to have green hair.
Right. But moving past that, and you leave the Listerine on the scalp, in the hair, and wrap it with a towel for at least 15 minutes, it will kill the lice like dead.
That's it?
That's it. Now, you're going to have to do this a couple of times because there are eggs that will come out, the nits, but it's one of the most rapid, effective, low-cost treatments we know of to get rid of lice.
So what? It's not the alcohol that does it.
It is probably, to a large extent, the alcohol. Yeah. Most likely.
I was going to say you could just put bourbon up there, but who wants to waste bourbon?
You could, but you don't want to.
You wouldn't want to do that. There's actually a prescription drug that has alcohol in it that they are selling for a ton of money.
Acetyl alcohol.
And it probably does much the same thing that Listerine does.
Why not just use rubbing alcohol? That's cheaper than Listerine.
It's a little harsh.
It is cheaper, but it is, as Joe says, a little harsh. Okay. It might work. I don't know. We haven't heard of anyone who's tried it.
You also mentioned vinegar. We have another Terry who pays us a visit every once in a while, Terry Bennett, who has an organization called Do Your Part. They're very green, earth-oriented, and she uses vinegar, baking soda, and something else as standard house borax, as standard household cleaners. Vinegar is a miracle.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. It has so many uses. It's amazing. And, of course, it's also good in salad dressing.
Yeah, of course.
Oh, but not just in salad dressing. I mean, that's the thing that's so cool about all of this is the French, and you know, we like to talk about grandma's wisdom. French grandmothers have known this stuff. Yeah. I mean, they didn't know exactly why, but you know, if you go to France, they're going to serve you salad at the end of your meal. Right? It doesn't start the meal.
Right.
It's at the end of the meal. And they're going to use vinaigrette.
Of course. What else?
And it has benefits that people just don't realize.
And why at the end?
Well, the fascinating thing is that vinegar at the end of the meal prevents a rapid blood sugar rise, and that keeps your insulin from scooting way up really quickly. And that is much better for you overall than allowing your blood sugar and your insulin to go way high really fast.
Huh.
So vinegar slows all of that down. Cinnamon does the same thing. So cinnamon with the morning meal and vinegar with the middle and evening meals.
I'll be darned. Jessica on Twitter says she recommends ginger for nausea and motion sickness. I've heard this too. Why
Yes.
is that?
I'm not quite sure why, except that it is a really old traditional remedy. I mean, this goes back 2,000 years in China, mm-hmm. and Chinese sailors used ginger for motion sickness. It's been studied, and it's held up in scientific studies.
We brought along our ginger root because we actually are very fond of ginger, especially when it's fresh. And there's clearly a pharmacology associated with ginger. I really love this one study. They put people in the vomit rocket. Is that what they call it? I forget. It's this chair where you get rotated until you throw up. And they found that ginger, in fact, could slow down how much time it took before you lost it. So there's some pretty good evidence that ginger is good as an anti-nausea medicine. So if you're going on a boating trip this summer, if you're going to the amusement park and getting on one of those rides that you know are likely to make you uncomfortable, make sure you take your ginger along or maybe take it ahead
My
of time.
My mother used to give us ginger ale when we felt had an upset stomach. And I'm wondering if, of course, I never saw a ginger root until I was about 25.
Right.
But I'm wondering if there really is enough ginger in the standard brands of ginger ale to make a difference.
There used to be back when you were a kid.
Aha.
Nowadays, you need to look for it. There are some brands.
Like Blenheim.
That, yes, Blenheim
burn
does.
You, burn
Blenheim
you.
Absolutely has real ginger in it, but some of the other brands just sort of have that flavoring without the actual ginger.
Graham on Facebook writes, whiskey. You can cure everything with whiskey.
Well, there are a lot of people who try to do that, and we've heard from a lot of people who use it in like a hot toddy as a cough medicine. It may work. It's not something we recommend very much just because it's very susceptible to abuse. Mm,
yeah. Now, of course, you know, anyone who's ever listened to the People's Pharmacy or read our column knows about the gin raisin remedy. And that means you basically get not the cheapest gin, not the most expensive gin, kind of middle of the road gin. It's the kind that's what, Terry?
Well, you want a gin that's actually flavored with real juniper berries. So that is what you need. You need to pay enough so that you're not getting the imitation stuff.
And then you get a box of golden raisins. You pour the gin over the raisins just enough so that they're covered. You let the gin evaporate. It takes about a week to 10 days, and you eat 9, not 10, not 4. You eat 9 daily, and some people report astonishing success.
Now, we don't know why 9 is the magic number. I think it is a magic number. But it's also about a teaspoon, and sometimes we have people tell us, well, you take a teaspoonful of these gin-drenched raisins.
And that's for arthritis? Is that
yes, joint
yes,
pain.
Yes, for joint pain.
Is it an anti-inflammatory? Is that
who knows?
Well, juniper berries do have some anti-inflammatory properties. Whether there's enough of that stuff in 9 gin-soaked raisins is a mystery.
Can you eat juniper berries, or are they poison?
You could. There are some kinds of juniper berries that are poisonous. The ones they use in gin are not. They are a little irritating to the kidneys, so you don't want to actually gobble down handfuls of juniper
So you're getting
berries.
Traces of juniper berries, and all the alcohol has evaporated.
and we've actually
get drunk from these raisins.
We've had it analyzed, and 9 gin-soaked raisins have 1 drop of alcohol. Not enough to get drunk on, although there was a sheriff up in the mountains of North Carolina who apparently on his way home from a convention was munching away on so many gin-soaked raisins to stay awake that when he got pulled over, he actually did blow a blood alcohol of more than 0.08. So he did get into trouble, although we don't think it was in his bloodstream. It was a residual.
Right. That's a lot of raisins.
Was a lot of raisins.
Yeah. Laura on Facebook writes, castor oil applied externally to bruises, bad veins, and minor injuries.
Oh, yes. This is one of the favorites. And people don't necessarily know that you can put castor oil on if you, you know, bump yourself. And you can prevent the bruise by putting castor oil on. Now, it doesn't work every single time, but it works surprisingly often.
We don't know why, but we have heard from grandmothers for a very long time that castor oil is great.
What is castor oil?
Castor oil is the oil from the seed of the castor bean plant. Okay, so you've heard of ricin.
Yes, it's the same plant.
Same plant, and actually the same seed. But the castor oil doesn't have ricin in it.
Wow.
Yes. I mean, we've heard about ricin because it is such a deadly poison, one of the deadliest toxins on the planet. But don't worry about castor oil. The ricin has been removed.
Okay. Spencer has been holding on for a while. He has a question about a drug, I guess. Spencer, welcome.
Thanks for taking my call. I saw Joe and Terry at your show and asked a question there, but... What I'm wondering about is there is an encapsulation method that's being pushed right now for islet cells for type 1 diabetes. Can you guys give me any information? The one company that I'm looking at is Viacyte out of California, and I think they're planning to go into clinical trials sometime in the spring.
Well, you know, this is really one of the most exciting areas of research in the field of diabetes right now, and that is how can we preserve insulin so that the body doesn't destroy it and provide for long-acting benefit? And this, what we call encapsulation process, is really where a lot of the action is. So I am very excited about these phase 3, phase 4 trials that are going to be coming along over the next couple of years to see if we can really treat type 1 diabetes in a way that is going to really provide lasting benefit for people who are suffering from this very difficult condition. In the meantime, of course, what we recommend for all people with diabetes, exercise, stress reduction, and a very thoughtful diet. Dr. Richard Bernstein has, I think, come up with one of the most intriguing diet approaches, which is low carb and reasonably high protein, and that does seem to make a big difference in blood sugar.
That's me.
Spencer, thank you for your call. Good luck to you.
Thank you.
Thank you. 704-926-WFAE is our number. That's 704-926-9323 or 800-603-WFAE. And, of course, as usual, you can get in touch with us every other way imaginable at WFAE.org/Charlotte Talks. It just occurs to me as I looked at the stuff that you've put on the desk here that the medicine cabinet – is not the only place where pharmaceuticals live in the house. They live in the cupboard. Because you've got Adolph's meat tenderizer on the desk, McCormick pure ground black pepper, tomato paste, Mount Olive dill strips, yellow mustard, soy sauce, and other. There's a cut onion in there. What do all these things do?
Well, let's start with the meat tenderizer and the cut onion.
All right.
Have you ever been stung by a yellow jacket or a bee?
Yes. Oh,
well,
yes.
It hurts.
Yes.
You want that hurt to stop. So what do? You cut your onion and you slap it on, the sting, and it makes the hurt go away.
We've actually talked to one of the world's foremost experts on the chemical ingredients in a cut onion, Dr. Eric Block. He was chairman of chemistry at SUNY.
Stony Brook.
Stony Brook. And Dr. Block says there are fabulous ingredients in cut onions.
Mm. Does it matter whether it's a purple onion or a yellow onion, a white onion? Does it
matter?
No,
I don't think it does.
Whatever you happen to have handy. And, you know, one of the stories that we heard on the radio was from a mom who said my 6-month-old was just crying uncontrollably after a bee sting. I put the onion on. The baby stopped crying. So I just don't think that's a placebo effect.
No.
Give it a go. If that doesn't work, bring out the meat tenderizer.
Or if you don't happen to have your onion handy. It needs to, you do need to cut it fresh for the for this particular purpose. Or if you want to use the meat tenderizer, it's got papain in it, which sort of counteracts the protein in the sting that makes it hurt. Mm. And you mix that meat tenderizer powder into a paste with water or with vinegar and slap it on.
Now, this is just for the pain. This is not for people who have allergic reactions.
Absolutely not. People with allergic reactions need to use their EpiPen and call 911.
And go immediately to the emergency department. But this is for your garden variety bee sting, yellow jacket sting.
Does it work on other insect stings besides bees and yellow jackets? Would it work? Would it take the itch out of a mosquito bite?
No, but okay. What we have is something much easier for your itch, and that is hot water. Hot enough to be uncomfortable, not so hot that it will burn. But next time you have a little poison ivy itch or a mosquito bite itch, run it under hot water. It will take away the uncomfortable itching feeling for up to 4 hours. And I found that one back when I was working on the original People's Pharmacy in the early 70s in a dermatology textbook of all things. But that wisdom seems to have been lost.
Why does it do that? Why does it work?
It apparently sort of scrambles the nerves that are sending that pain signal or the itch signal to your brain by
they're worried about being burnt.
Exactly. And you don't want to burn your skin,
right?
But you want to get those nerves kind of confused.
Now, I know what the black pepper is for because I read one of your columns about this, but I find it amazing that it works. So tell me what you use black pepper for.
Well, this is the time of year when you're biking, you're hiking, you're, you know, grilling and you're cutting, and you're going to cut yourself. I mean, there's always going to be a minor bleed sometime during the summer. Get out the ground black pepper. Now, we want finely ground, but if you get it on a cut quickly, it will stop bleeding almost instantly. And it really doesn't hurt. I mean, a lot of people go, oh, black pepper on a cut, that's going to be really painful. Nah, it doesn't hurt at all.
Why does it work?
I wish we could tell you. I think it has something to do with the texture because there are a few other things that also work for this.
Like
powdered sage, cayenne pepper, actually, which might sting. We haven't tried it, but people tell us it works.
But here's the thing. You know, doctors who are listening to us are going, oh, my goodness. They're talking about nonsense. Where are the double-blind, randomized, placebo-controlled trials? And I say to them, either you're bleeding or you're not bleeding. If the pepper works, you will know in about 30 seconds.
Well, if you are bleeding and you pour black pepper on the wound and it stops the bleeding, what about the risk of infection from the black pepper getting into the wound?
I've not ever heard of black pepper causing infection.
We don't have time
that
to tell
you. That isn't to say it wouldn't happen, but it doesn't seem to be common.
We don't have time to tell you the story about this fellow who was putting together two pipes, air conditioning pipes, but he cut himself really, really badly. He poured the black pepper on. Now, we don't recommend this. When you do what he did, you need to go to the emergency department, but he couldn't because he was isolated. There was no way for him to get to an emergency department, and somebody wasn't going to pick him up until 5 o'clock that afternoon. The black pepper stopped the bleeding, stopped the pain, and no infection.
Wow. We'll come back with more of your calls and your emails and your tweets, etc., with Joe and Terry Graydon in just a moment. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and NC State University's Jenkins Professional Online MBA program, offering accelerated and flexible course plans to fit any schedule or location. Information at mba.ncsu.edu. And the Charlotte Hounds, Charlotte's all-pro lacrosse team. Fun for the whole family this Saturday night at 7 in Memorial Stadium uptown. Tickets and game schedule at charlottehounds.com. As children, older adults remember leaving the house in the morning and not returning until dinner time. I remember that. Their parents didn't know exactly where they were, and the kids didn't have to check in. Well, today that trend has completely reversed, with helicopter parents hovering over their child's every move. Lenore Scanese made headlines when she allowed her son to ride the New York City subway alone at age 9, and she fills us in on her free-range kids philosophy tomorrow at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, 6 months after the Newtown shootings, families of victims meet with members of Congress. efforts to reignite the gun control debate.
Join us for that discussion on The Diane Rehm Show this morning and every weekday morning from 10 until noon, right after Charlotte Talks, here on listener-supported public radio, we're 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Joe and Terry Graydon are with us, hosts of The People's Pharmacy. You hear it here every Saturday morning at 7 on WFAE. They'll be speaking at the public library several times today. They'll be at, oh goodness, I've lost the piece of paper. Now let me see, quickly go through. I can't find
South County Regional Library at 2.
That's on Ray Road at 2 o'clock. And then the main library right down the street on Tryon here at 6 o'clock tonight. It's free. You have to register to go, though, and you can find that information on their website or on ours at WFAE.org. 1,000 questions have I, but our listeners have many more. So let's go to Nicole in Davidson. Welcome to the program. You're on WFAE, Nicole.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I am a mother of three approaching 40, and I've started getting migraines. And I've done some research on migraine triggers, but I'd love to hear if you guys have any recommendations for migraine prevention or home remedy.
We have one of the strangest home remedies for migraine headaches that you will ever hear any place. And we have no science. Well, actually,
there is some science.
We do have some
science. And you're going to like this. You're going to like this, Nicole.
Nicole, have you ever heard or experienced something called brain freeze?
Yes.
Okay. So brain freeze, for those who may not know what we're talking about, is when you eat ice cream too fast or slurp something that's very, very cold. So I happen to be fond of Frappuccinos, Starbucks, what can I say? And if you do this too fast, you will get something called brain freeze.
Which is very painful.
It is.
Man. Excruciatingly
painful.
Very painful. Cold. So you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
But what you want to do is, at the very first sign that you're getting a migraine, go out and give yourself brain freeze. Your favorite technique, whether it's an ice cream cone or a slushy or what have you. And the brain freeze will very often just stop that migraine short, so that once you're over the brain freeze, you don't have the migraine.
Now, the science to support this came out a year or two ago, and Terry, you probably remember it a little better than I do. The cold temperature affects blood vessels above the palate, affecting brain flow and counteracts something that's causing that migraine.
Well, exactly. What happens is, when you induce brain freeze, is the blood vessels in your upper palate are shutting down so that cold doesn't get to your brain and damage it. And then when they open back up again, that's when it really hurts. But that also is apparently how it's changing the migraine so that it doesn't continue.
We don't know the exact mechanism, but at least there is some science here, and it's worth a try. And hey, what's the worst thing that can happen? A little ice cream on a hot day like today. Good luck with that.
Thank you.
Bye-bye, Nicole.
Bye.
Let's go to Michael in Charlotte. You're on WFAE, Michael.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Go ahead.
I listen to your program every Saturday. As a matter of fact, I started listening to it after I came out of the Randolph Behavioral Center, being diagnosed as bipolar.
Mm-hmm.
59 years old. That went at that particular time. Now, bipolar has certain symptoms. I believe one of them is suicidal tendency, depression, gestures of grandiosity, and different things like that. How is it that if I were diagnosed bipolar, I work for a rentals company in Huntersville. I haven't missed but one day in 5 years. And I don't take any medication.
Okay.
And I live holistic.
All right.
Well, this is a very interesting issue. It gets to what's called the DSM, and now it's called 5, which is the Diagnostic Bible.
Statistical Manual.
For psychiatry. And we actually talked to one of the physicians who was involved in the DSM-4, and he basically said bipolar is the mental health problem du jour, and this was about 5 or 10 years ago. That's not to say that bipolar doesn't exist. It used to be called manic depression. It's just become exceptionally popular as a diagnostic category, and probably a lot of people are being overdiagnosed. So I think in what Michael is trying to say is, hey, I'm functioning really pretty well. I work. I don't miss work. I don't need medicines. I may have some ups. I may have some downs. They may be a little bit more extreme than everybody, because we all have good days and bad days. Let's be honest. We all have those fluctuations. But I think that maybe what Michael is saying is, yes, he got diagnosed bipolar, but maybe it was an overdiagnosis.
And, okay. And perhaps, Michael, your attention to living holistically is also helping.
Because it kind of fits in with these home remedies. You eat the right foods at the right time, and you take care of yourself, and you watch your health.
Exactly. You follow grandma's recommendations. Yeah. You eat your vegetables. You go out and play. Mm-hmm. You get a good night's sleep.
Wow. Unlike the three of us. Okay, Michael, thank you for your call. Dr. Galley in Charlotte has a comment, I'm told, about bleeding. Doctor, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike, thanks. Listen, a great program as always. I wanted to make a comment, too. Their Saturday programs are fantastic because each week they have experts, a lot of times from Chapel Hill, but also from all over the country, speaking about these various issues, and I think that's very important. All of these home remedies are great, but I think that on some issues that are so simple that basic first aid should be the first remedy. And, you know, if one cuts oneself, one should apply pressure for 5 minutes by the clock, okay, and if it's and then check it. Don't check it intermittently, but just direct pressure. This is the same for nosebleeds. And if after 5 minutes by the clock you take your hand off and it begins to bleed again, you apply it for another 5 minutes.
Well,
and
you know,
if it doesn't stop at that time, then, you know, it would be necessary to do another thing rather than running around and trying to get pepper and that kind of stuff. I'm just making a basic
comment. No, your point is very well taken, Dr. Galley. The only problem is Americans are impatient people. If we could just find someone who could apply pressure for 5 minutes without peaking, that would be great. But
this allows the natural body's natural clotting mechanisms to take place.
Absolutely,
and that kind of stuff needs to be disseminated. Also, pepper's a great cleansing agent, and almost any astringent will stop bleeding. And I'm not being critical.
I completely understand. We do have one addition to what you have said, Dr. Galley, and that is the following. There are some people who will not stop bleeding easily.
Right. Those, if you're taking aspirin every day.
There you go. People who are on anticoagulants like aspirin or warfarin, we talked a little bit earlier about Coumadin, there is a product you can buy over-the-counter in your pharmacy called
Wound Seal.
And this stuff works like magic. So I would actually encourage you to maybe even get past the home remedies we've been talking about and stop by the pharmacy, especially if you have a tendency to bleed, and buy Wound Seal. It will stop a bleed even if you're on warfarin.
Doctor, thank you for your call. You have a remedy for nosebleeds, if I recall correctly.
Well, we do, and we have heard this remedy so many times. And, you know, the first few times we heard it, it just didn't sound like it made any sense. And then we kept hearing it, and we thought, well, people are getting some benefit from it. People tell us that dropping a chain of keys down the back of the neck will stop a nosebleed. And what we have ultimately figured out from all of the variations that people have given us on this home remedy is you need something cold on the back of the neck to help stop the nosebleed.
Now, I would agree with Dr. Galley that, you know, pinching the nose can also help if you can do that for 5 minutes without letting go.
Okay. I want to go through – we have lots of listeners who want to talk to you, but let's go through some of the stuff that's on the table here that you brought. Let's start with yellow mustard. This is classic yellow mustard, French's, no Grey Poupon, no big Rolls Royce pulling up next to you.
No. You need the cheap stuff.
That's the okay, what's it for?
Well, as I said earlier, it's a threefer. Number one, this is the time of year when cramps, very common. We get dehydrated. We're out there exercising, biking, hiking. Have the yellow mustard handy. it will take away your cramps within a minute or less. We heard from a
bite. What do you do? Do you put it on the skin or do you
ingest it? No, you actually swallow it for the cramps. You swallow a teaspoonful. And if you don't want to carry around that mustard container, get some packets.
Okay.
I always get reprimanded when I say this, but you know they are free at fast food restaurants. Just have a couple in your back pocket. We heard from a biker. He was on a long-distance charity bike ride in Florida, and I think he was going over 100 miles, and around mile marker 40 or 50, his legs started cramping up so that he couldn't bike anymore. He whipped out the yellow mustard that he had in his backpack. He said the cramps were gone within a minute. He finished the race, no problem. Now, there's a twofer. What else can you use yellow mustard for, dear?
Well, we mentioned that you can put cold yellow mustard on a burn.
Right.
And it stops the pain and it stops the blistering. So that's good. And then the other thing is that some people find that a teaspoonful of yellow mustard will really stop heartburn.
Yeah, this is counterintuitive to me. I read this yesterday. That and vinegar, right?
Right. And it does seem completely counterintuitive.
Because isn't heartburn acid reflux? Isn't that what it is? Stomach acid's coming back up. Why would an acidic product cause that to stop?
I wish we could give you a good scientific answer. We did talk to what we think is one of the country's leading gastroenterologists, Nicholas Shaheen at UNC, and he says, you know, I've heard this too. It doesn't make any sense to me either, but yeah, a little vinegar might just relieve the heartburn. You know, I think we've paid too much attention to acid because we have these acid-suppressing drugs like Protonix and Prevacid and Prilosec. Mm-hmm. When you have a hammer, everything looks like a nail. You've heard that expression before. So acid's the enemy. Well, it's not the enemy. I mean, ask any anthropologist. They'll tell you.
Well, we all have acid, and so do all the other animals that we know of. Acid is there for a very good reason, and it's protecting us from nasty stuff that comes along with what we eat.
Hmm. Bottom line, we think maybe we become a little too reliant on acid-suppressing drugs, and maybe a little mustard will do the trick.
Now, you have Phillips Milk of Magnesia on the table, and I'm going to wager that is not for acid reflux or upset stomach in the way you're thinking.
No, that familiar blue bottle, we heard from someone who was in Brazil on vacation, forgot the antiperspirant. They were in the cab. The cab drivers, you know, apparently the cab driver overheard the conversation, forgot the antiperspirant. The cab driver said, get thee some milk of magnesia, not to swallow, but to slosh.
So you put it on your armpits and it works as a deodorant, not an antiperspirant, but a deodorant.
Really?
And we heard this, we thought, isn't that fascinating, wrote it up, and tried it out ourselves.
And Terry actually invented MOM, Milk of Magnesia, People's Pharmacy, roll-on deodorant, because it's a little uncomfortable to slosh Milk of Magnesia onto your underarms. It's just messy.
And you have on the front label, no aluminum chlorhydrate. Now, this is a key ingredient in most deodorants.
Antiperspirants. Mm-hmm.
And one that they advertise.
Yes.
We have
exactly.
And we now are a little concerned about the neurotoxicity of aluminum. You probably remember the rumors that aluminum was a problem 30, 40 years ago. Well, they haven't gone away, actually. There's new research suggesting that aluminum is not particularly good for your brain. So we think, get the aluminum out. And we actually have just added two new MOM products that are aluminum-free. So we think, hey, why not use magnesium? It's good for you. Most of us don't get nearly enough magnesium and need supplements during the day.
Although I'm sure it doesn't get a lot of work or heavy usage in the summertime, I do want to talk about one product that seems to be a miracle, at least when you talk about it. That's Vicks VapoRub. This has been around forever. It's basically what? Petroleum jelly.
Petroleum jelly with lots of herbal herbal aromas in it.
Made right here. Actually originated. It's no longer made here, I don't think. But it was invented here, theoretically, in Greensboro.
Exactly. Or maybe Goldsboro.
By the doctor, I guess he was a pharmacist, Richardson. His brother-in-law, Dr. Vic, is why it's on there. It's a distinctive smell. I mean,
I haven't smelled this in 40 years.
But you will never forget it.
But it brings back all those memories. Yes, it's the camphor and the menthol and the eucalyptol and the thymol. It's got all of that
stuff
in it.
So what do you do with it? You put it on your nails for your nail fungus. You put it on your bites for your itchies. You put it on the soles of your feet for a nighttime time cough, and it will take away your cough almost immediately.
And you don't know why that works.
We don't.
David on Facebook writes, I have been drinking 8 ounces of beet juice for high blood pressure, and it works so well that I've stopped taking my blood pressure medicine.
I do hope that David was checking in with his doctor on this. But yes, this is actually a wonderful remedy from the medical literature, for which there is now a good bit of scientific research to back it up.
Absolutely as good as many blood pressure pills. It works through a mechanism called nitric oxide, a very hot chemical these days that your body makes naturally, and relaxes blood vessels. So science to support grandma's wisdom.
And Philip on Facebook wants to know if you have any suggestions for treating poison ivy rash.
You know, milk of magnesia, back to Philip's, it doesn't have to be Philip's house brand milk of magnesia. Just smear it on and it might take away that itch even better than old-fashioned calamine lotion.
Many drugs, probably all drugs, have some side effects depending on who you are.
Absolutely.
And what you're eating. Exactly. Do home remedies have side effects?
Yes, probably. Probably home remedies do have some potential side effects, but their potential for side effects is much lower than that of medications, usually.
Okay. And could you please ask the beloved Gradens, buddy emails, what their take is on Victoza?
We're not excited about Victoza.
We're very concerned.
We're excited in the wrong way.
Yeah.
This is a diabetes drug, a fairly new one, called a GLP-1 inhibitor, and there is significant concern that it may increase your risk for pancreatic cancer, which is a nasty.
Or at least pancreatitis. The pancreatic cancer is controversial, but yes, ask your doctor about this new research.
This could go on. We should just tell Diane to take the day off. Diane Rimka, this could go on till noon at least, but we're out of time. Joe and Terry Graydon, hosts of The People's Pharmacy. If you've never heard them, they're on Saturday mornings at 7. I can't imagine that you haven't heard them, but Saturday mornings at 7 here at WFAE, and it's always worth the hour. Get it as a podcast if you can.